Hello, and welcome to Learning for Life at Gustavus, the podcast about people teaching and learning at Gustavus Adolphus College, and the myriad ways that Gustavus liberal arts education provides a lasting foundation for lives of fulfillment and purpose. I'm your host, Greg Castor, faculty member in the Department of History. I've always thought that one of the best ways to get to know a college or university campus is to read the student newspaper, a belief only strengthened by my immersion the past year in digitized back issues of the Gustavian Weekly from the late 1960s and early 70s. Founded in 1891, the Weekly is a treasure trove of information and perspectives on campus life in all its dimensions, from the prosaic and familiar to the highly controversial, surprising, and sometimes disturbing, including the campus responses to developments and events in the wider world. Moreover, we know statistically that student newspapers and their websites are widely read by the students who are their primary audience. For all these reasons, and to learn more about their own stories as well, I wanted to have Emily Van Gorder and Cadence Paramore on the podcast. A senior English and biology double major, Emily is editor-in-chief of the Weekly, while Cadence, a senior English major, is assistant editor-in-chief. Their positions require them to be attuned to campus life broadly in ways most students aren't, and I thought it would be both interesting and important to hear their reflections on Gustavus and their own experiences as student journalists as they look back over the past year and more on the eve of Emily's graduation, a semester away from Cadence's, and 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic. So welcome to the podcast, Emily and Cadence, and Cadence's cat. I'm delighted you could both join me.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm excited.
I know it's great. Thank you both. I know it's a busy time of the year. We're recording on reading day, which means finals start tomorrow, Saturday. So I really appreciate it. But Cadence, what is the name of your cat? Do you have one or more?
Her name's Kiko. K-I-K-O. She's just 8 or 9 months old, so she's a little rascal right now.
Oh, okay. What kind of cat? Black and tabby or?
Yeah, she's a tuxedo cat, but she has more white than you'd expect for a tuxedo cat.
You'll have to send me a photo. Our first pet, my wife Kate, who was a prof in the history department until she retired, my wife Kate always wanted a St. Bernard, and I thought, there's no way, this is insane. I mean, I babysat a St. Bernard once. It was crazy, dogs that. I mean, I love them, but the when they sneeze, it's a little gross. This is terrible. Kate was at her grandmother's funeral in New York, and she came home to a kitty cat, a tuxedo kitty cat named Cooper. And he was a sweetheart. We loved Cooper, and then eventually got a black lab as well, and they got along together. So I'm a cat and dog person. So welcome, Kiko, as well. So why don't we start with the finals? How is it for both of you, just in terms of that? Cadence, you were saying before we started recording, you have an essay due. What do you have in the way of each of you in the way of finals work? Do you have exams, essays, mix of both? Go ahead, Cadence.
I have a mix of both, mostly essays, though. As an English major, I found that's typically what my finals lean towards, which I'm very happy with. I can write pages and pages more than I can take an exam.
Oh, that's good. What are the essays about?
I have a short, about 3-page essay for religion and ecology, kind of reflecting on the readings we've done in the class. That's what's due tomorrow. Okay. I have an English final for postmodern U.S. writers of color, and I'm writing about humor and how it's really critical in stories told by marginalized groups so they don't re-traumatize people.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow, you just reminded me that I went to graduate school, so did my wife Kate, at Boston University, and there was a historian there named Joseph Boskin who wrote, whose expertise was humor and black humor in particular, African-American humor. And he wrote a terrific book on, it may have been called Sambo or something like that, but the use of humor, including in, you may know, you're too young to maybe know about, I certainly not remember, the Jack Benny Show and this character Rochester played by a black actor. But that's cool. That's really neat. That's an important topic. And you also just reminded me, in high school, I did a whole thing. I was in love with black comedians at the time, including, Bill Cosby. But that's another story. What about you, Emily? What do you have in terms of finals?
It's not looking as bad as it has been in past years, actually, which is a great way to end the semester.
That's great.
I have a presentation for my art history class, a two essays for my English and biology courses and a online test for Latin.
Well, that's not too bad. What are the essays about?
My English essay is, I still need to pick a topic, which isn't great because it is due tomorrow. But
we will edit that out.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm comparing, I'm comparing To the Lighthouse and the novel Never Let Me Go.
Oh, wow.
So I'm thinking about looking at the role of fate or the idea of predestination in both.
Oh, that is extremely interesting. The Greek in me is really interested. The Greek American. Oh, that's cool. And then did you say you're doing one for biology as well?
Yes, I am for my developmental bio class. It's fantastic. We only had two tests this whole semester. And so the later half of the semester, we've been able to do more creative projects. So this essay is fantastic. I'm hoping to write about the ethics of using HeLa cells in continued research and how it kind of contrasts with the potential use of induced pluripotent stem cells.
Wow. Just briefly, what are the former cells? Tell us a little bit about those.
The HeLa cells?
Yes.
Yes. So they are cells taken from a woman named Henrietta Lacks, who was a black woman in the 50s, who had cervical cancer, was not made aware of this fact, and had her cells taken without permission. Yeah. And they're essentially immortal. And she was not made aware of this fact. She was never compensated. Her family was never financially compensated. And she ended up dying from her cancer. But
it's
the cells
incredible.
Are still found. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, the book. What's the book? The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And then my wife, Kate, before she retired, she had, would it have been her? I don't know if it would have been her daughter or granddaughter. She had some family members, Henrietta's family members, and maybe the author, too. I'm not sure about that. But come to her class on, African-American history. Yeah, it was amazing. I unfortunately was teaching at that moment. I couldn't get to it. It just sounded incredible. That's a fabulous liberal arts final essay, bringing together science, ethics, all of the above. That's cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, I guess I found finals stressful. All students do when I was an undergraduate at Northern Illinois University. My memory is, I think I'm right about this. We went home at Christmas, at least from the fall, and then had to come back and do finals. So that made Christmas kind of crazy. But I hope things have gotten a little better as professors have changed assignments. And I've stopped doing, comprehensive finals. I think they're crazy and it doesn't work for me. So in any case, good luck with all of that. It sounds really interesting and not, as you say, not too painful. So why don't we start, before we get into your work as editors and the Weekly and, Gustavus and all the other, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're from? Emily, you can start. Where'd you grow up and how'd you wind up at Gustavus?
Sure. So I'm from Parker, Colorado. It's I'm about 30 minutes south of Denver.
Okay.
And about 787 miles away from Minnesota by car. And I first heard about Gustavus, I think my junior year of high school, because my high school librarian, Damon Larson, I believe he's the class of 86, went to Gustavus.
Oh, wow.
And just the way he talks about it just makes it sound like the most fantastic place on earth.
That is really cool.
I was convinced that I didn't want to stay in state for school. And I loved the idea of being at a small liberal arts college where professors knew my name and I could form really close and substantial relationships with people. And my high school is about the same size as Gustavus. So I knew I was comfortable with, that size of a campus.
Right.
And I applied and got in, and, thanks to scholarships and grants, it was cheaper than in-state tuition.
Wow.
So that and the 14-hour drive to get up here every year makes it worth it.
Oh, that's great. Wow. And, you know, by the way, a lot of people don't understand, I mean, members of the public, that the sticker price is almost never what people pay. I mean, there's all this talk about, you know, rightly, but it can be misleading, right, with scholarships and other mm-hmm. financial aid. That's really neat. So it sounds like no one in your family had gone to Gustavus. Is that correct or am I wrong?
That's correct.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I like both. So often, you know, people, oh, my great, 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 you know, went and everyone's going. But then we, you know, first gen Gusties, maybe is what we call you. Yep. That's neat. What about you, Cadence? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I've actually moved around quite a bit. I grew up for about 8 years in Rosemount, bounced around between Apple Valley, Eagan, back to Apple Valley, ended up in St. Paul, actually, about, oh gosh, I don't know how long ago. I was in eighth grade then. Okay. So I spent eighth grade in St. Paul and all of high school at Como Park Senior High. My guidance counselor when I was like, I have no clue how to apply for college. Both my parents went to two-year technical colleges. And so I'm like, I have no clue how to apply to like the university, help. And she recommended Gustavus. And like Emily, I, you know, got a really good deal with scholarships and financial aid. It ended up being my cheapest option and I pay for school all on my own. So that was wonderful.
That's fantastic. Prospective students and or parents, are you listening? Cheapest option, cheaper than in-state in Colorado and cheapest option here in Minnesota. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all cool. By the way, I love St. Paul. I love Como. My wife, Kate, and I have just begun. I mean, it's embarrassing. Just actually during COVID, begun to learn more about, you know, we'd been to the conservatory there in Como Park, but not really walking around the lake and that beautiful pavilion building. And yeah, the Twin Cities are really, really cool.
They are. Sorry. Right. I spent most of my high school experience walking around Como Lake and hanging out at the pavilion. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. So were you both already interested in, were you doing, you know, student newspaper work in high school already? Cadence, were you doing that or that came later?
We didn't have a school newspaper, but we did have a literary and art magazine, kind of like our Firethorn. And I was one of the design editors for that and then eventually the head editor. And it really got me interested in editing. I did that my junior and senior year of high school.
Okay. And what about you, Emily?
We did have a student newspaper, but you had to take a journalism class first. And I just never had the time to work it into my schedule with classes I was already taking.
Okay.
But like Cadence, I was through my, I believe it was my creative writing class. We helped start our school's kind of literary and arts magazine with, you know, poetry, photos, different submissions from students. And, you know, I thought I was interested in journalism and decided to pursue that once I got to Gustavus.
That's neat. So you both have that shared experience in high school. And then you both are, well, Emily, you're a double major, English, but you're both English majors. I'm curious, did you come to Gustavus knowing what you wanted to major in? Emily, did you know?
I did, at least halfway. I have always loved English. I've always pictured a future in which I'm writing something. So I knew that I really wanted to major in English while in college, just to kind of get a good foundation for whatever I decided to do in the future.
Right.
But I still remember dropping off my declaration of an English major form on the last day of my freshman year, right as my dad and I are about to drive away from campus back home. And the car got a little tense
as I had to reassure him.
Don't worry, I'm declaring a bio major too. I just haven't found the right advisor.
Yeah, and don't worry, Dad. I hope he's no longer worrying because English majors do just fine. It's such a myth. It's just an absolute myth. It's one of these enduring myths that I feel like I'm in advertising. I'm a professor. I sell history of the liberal arts and all of us, right? Because it's just not true. Statistics show. I was just talking to a kind of alum. He dropped out for reasons we don't need to get into after first year and is a successful business person. But he was telling me at breakfast yesterday, this is the truth, right? That he doesn't really care what your GPA is. And he doesn't really care that much what your major is, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, whether you can think, write, speak. I hope things have chilled now.
They have.
That's good. I'm trying to think. I don't remember my, of course, it was a very different time. I started college in 71. I cannot recall my parents who kind of like, I don't know about you, Emily, if your parents went to college. My mom went to a two-year teacher college, as I've said many times on the podcast. My dad didn't go to college. So I guess I'm first gen in some ways. But I can't recall them saying, what are you doing? Are you crazy majoring in history? But anyway, were you already attracted to biology, though? I mean, what attracted you to bio?
I was also interested in biology from a very young age. I think in fifth grade, my class was watching a video about the crime scene units and using DNA to, you know, identify suspects. And I thought that was just so cool. And I've, you know, changed my mind a few times about, you know, what I've wanted to do with biology. But I've been very interested in forensics for a really long time. Okay. So that's what I'm going to use my interest in biology towards.
Well, I see a future for you as a crime novelist or crime reporter.
That is my retirement plan.
Okay. Oh, you're already thinking of retirement. Good Lord. Or maybe you mean retirement from Gustavus as a student. We can get into that a lot later in the podcast. So that's all interesting. So, and Emily, did your parents go? They didn't go to Gustavus, right? Or did they?
No, they did not go to Gustavus. My dad was actually the first person on his side of the family to go to college. Uh-huh. And my mom went to college at Colorado State University.
Okay. And did they grow up out there? Is that why you were in Colorado?
Mom did. She grew up in Colorado. And my dad grew up between New York and Arkansas. And then got into the Air Force, which took him to Colorado.
Oh sure, perfect. Yep. Yeah.
And they met years later at a Lockheed Martin.
Oh wow, that's cool. I always love these stories. So both of you obviously want. Is it now? Tell me a little bit about how both of you wind up working for the Weekly and become editor in chief and assistant editor in chief. What was that like? What's that process like for anyone and for you both specifically? And I'm seeing Cadence doing my little bit of due diligence here, not enough, I suppose. But you weren't you with a photography editor too at one point?
I actually became that like my first semester at Gustavus. I didn't start off at the Weekly. You know, we were placed into on-campus jobs. I worked for the Scene Shop, actually. It was great. I was in the lighting, but it was just a bit too much physical labor for someone who's not very strong. And so I was looking at, you know, what can I do that really takes, you know, my skills into account? Anything with writing would be wonderful. And my CF, she was so helpful. I was like, what do I do? And she asked her friends and found out for me that the Weekly was hiring. So I immediately went into opinion writing. And then quickly they were like, oh, you can do photography too. Let's have you do photography. And then they liked me so much that when they realized their photography editor was graduating early in December, they asked me if I wanted to do that. And I, of course, said yes. I love editing.
That's neat. And by the way, I remember reading your, I don't know if you had do you have a weekly column? I remember some of your columns. You said opinion writing that just came back to me. Do you kind of apply for the position? I think you use the word apply. Is that how it works?
Yeah. We fill out a little sheet, even if like you've already worked there. I worked there this year. I still applied for a position next year, but Yeah, they all take into account, you know, past experience. And if you've worked with the Weekly and done a good job, you're pretty much a shoo-in. But it is a formality, you know, in case there is someone else that's, you know, better suited.
And so are you the heir apparent, so to speak, to editor-in-chief? Or what did you apply for next year?
Yes, I applied for editor-in-chief and got that for fall semester.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations. And Emily must have been in on that, I'm sure.
Yes.
And so, Emily, what about you? What's your path to editor-in-chief at the Weekly?
Sure. So I was interested in joining the Weekly in some capacity as a first year. I wasn't really sure how to get started, But luckily, one of my CFs freshman year, Samantha Clevin, I believe, was the news editor. And so I think it was during a floor meeting, I said I was interested in joining the newspaper, and she asked if I wanted a job. So I was able to fill out the paperwork, and I started as a news writer that year.
And then is the editor-in-chief position, is that one year only? Is that how it works?
I believe you can have it for multiple years. I believe Cole Treblehorn held the position for 2 years.
Okay.
But I was a news writer first year, sophomore, junior, a variety writer junior year, and editor-in-chief this year.
I read your stuff too. I do read the weekly. lately, it's funny, I've been reading it while on sabbatical. I read it online. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, by the way, I don't know if it's a complaint or a comment. I can't always tell when the online articles were written. I don't know if I'm missing out on, you know, like when I'm a historian, so I need to know when, you know, what dates, the context, but that you can help me with that maybe another time. Anyway, but I like the website. So are you both doing other, I mean, I would imagine that is a huge time commitment, you know, to the weekly. Are you doing other co-curricular activities as well? Emily, are you?
Yes, this semester I taught a peer malt class for the very first time.
Oh, I saw that. You want to explain that? I'm going to have a peer malt for the first time this coming fall.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, tell us what that's about.
It was for Kate's fast food in politics class.
Kate Knudsen in the poli sci department. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And it was super interesting.
Yeah, and this is for the first term seminar. And let's see, the MALT, what does the MALT stand for?
It's mentor, academic leader, teacher.
Teacher,
something like that. Tutor.
Yeah. I kept saying teacher and getting corrected. It is tutor.
It's tutor. Okay. I just agreed. I'm teaching a first term seminar. I usually teach it on the 1960s. I'm going to teach it this time on, because everything that's been happening in this country, I'm going to teach it on Spike Lee's film, Do the Right Thing, but also really about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. In any case, I was contacted by an alum's daughter who reached out about being a peer malt, and I didn't even, because I'm on leave, what's a peer malt? I mean, malt certainly sounds good to me, and evokes, I don't know, for some reason evokes college or high school, a malt shop, you know. Mm-hmm. But going to do it. It'll be fun. I podcasted with her mom. So anyway, yeah, that sounds like, and you're making me feel even better about it, Emily, knowing that.
Yes, I had a fantastic time. Highly recommend.
Dr. Knudsen, good. I maybe reach out to you too about what I might do. That's again another story. That's neat. So you've been busy. And what about you, Cadence? Are you doing other things in addition to being assistant editor in chief? Which God knows sounds like a lot to me.
It takes up so much time, but I think I over-applied myself freshman year and was in 9 different clubs because I wanted to explore as much as possible. Yeah. I ended up leaving most of them because the weekly does take up a lot of my time.
Yeah, good.
Not spreading myself too thin, but I have talked with starting another writing club because I believe the one that we had my freshman year no longer exists. So my friends and I are going to try to start another writing club this fall.
That's great. What would it be focused around? Do you know yet?
I think we decided it'll be a lot like the one that existed before where we have prompts and we just spend an hour kind of talking, sharing ideas and writing based on the prompt, or if we feel not like doing that, then whatever we want, and then sharing at the end.
That's really cool because you both know this. I mean, you're English majors and writers and editors, but so many people think of writing as a solitary act, and it is in some ways, I think, but it's also a collective act, I think, at its best. Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me, well, first of all, so faculty do, you know, have writing groups on campus, faculty everywhere, not just at Gustavus, but then also when I was a graduate student, a professor at Boston University, history prof, created something he called the garage at his home. And it was for graduate students, those of us working on our dissertations in history. And it really was so helpful, both in terms of getting the feedback, right, sharing our work, but also in, you know, having to meet a deadline. Somehow meeting a deadline you know, kind of set by you and your peers was more important to me than the one set by the professor. So it made us more productive. That's really cool. I hope it happens. That's mm-hmm. neat. Maybe we can come back to the process of writing a bit in a while too, if there's time. But I'd like to hear each of you talk a bit about the work involved, and you know, what does it mean, Emily, to be editor in chief of the student newspaper? What do you do as editor?
That is a great question. I think we had a running joke through the semester that nothing's your job until everything goes wrong, and then everything's your problem.
Very good. I like that.
Because you know, you're not a section editor where like you're managing, you know, the opinion writers or the variety writers, and you're not taking care of photos, but really hiring, firing, working out stipend pay, making sure everything's flowing the way it needs to, helping brainstorm when things go wrong at the last minute, taking over layout when people can't make it into the office.
Oh, gee.
Sending things off to be printed, making sure everything's in the right format before it goes off to be printed. Coordinating, sending lots and lots of emails.
Yeah.
So a little bit of everything.
I just literally made a note next to my question about your roles, emails, and I wondered about that.
Yes. Yeah,
just, actually, it's reassuring to know. Supposedly, students don't use emails anymore, but I guess, you know, you're still using email. Yeah, I would imagine the amount of emailing must be kind of mind-boggling.
It is a lot.
Yeah. Yep. And do you... or maybe this is your role, Cadence, or if there's a copy editor. I mean, Emily, when you say making sure the layout is proper, do you actually read, as editor in chief, do you read everything? Do you go over everything? Or how closely do you read an issue before it appears?
I always make a point to look over everything before we send it off. But we also have the benefit of a fantastic team of copy editors who read through articles, proofread, help pull everything together. But layout as far as, you know, the text looks correct, photos are correctly placed, you know, every photo has a caption and a credit to the photographer. We had so many issues at the beginning of the year with... gosh, I don't even know how to say this. The format we were sending our pages off to be printed was incorrect.
Oh.
And during our orientation issue, I think I was in the office until midnight trying to figure out why it wasn't working. And then I had to leave because my parents were in the parking lot and we were supposed to, you know, be at Applebee's 4 hours earlier. So I went back in the next morning and was able to call House of Print and work it out. But that definitely took some working around.
All right. That sounds like a classic journalism story. And I'm picturing you, I know this is anachronistic, but I'm dating myself, picturing you with an eye shade and a small, you know, lamp working late at night.
That is what it felt like.
Yeah, I bet. You know, and then once upon a time, I'm the labor historian in me, the printers, you know, the printers were the, I mean, they were the editors too. It's so amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think 19th century printers, even pre-Civil War printers, the work involved. Oh, there you are with your sleeves rolled up and ink all over you. But you got it out, right? It sounds
yes.
like you figured it out.
We did.
Yeah. So Cadence, what is your role as assistant editor in chief?
I'd say it's about the same thing, kind of learning how to be the head editor is what it feels like. It's also called managing editor. So I do make sure, you know, that people are doing their jobs, kind of that side of it as well. And, you know, having those difficult conversations with people when needed. And like Emily said, stepping in when people are gone or when things go wrong.
Yeah. What about... And, you know, this is, kind of, I love journalism movies. I don't know if you've, either one of you ever seen any journalism movies, you know, over the years?
I think the last one I saw was Zodiac.
Oh, yeah. That's what's his name? Is that with Robert Downey?
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yep. And then Spotlight.
Oh, yeah. Also good. That's about the probe into the Catholic Church and abuses, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I loved All the President's Men when it came out, that swing at Watergate. And then the one with Meryl Streep, she plays the editor of the, oh, that may have been around the Pentagon Papers, the Washington Post. Anyway, I'm a sucker for good. And back, I teach a course on film in the 1930s, and His Girl Friday is a classic. God, a great journalism movie. Anyway, but I wonder, I'm thinking of some scenes. So how do you, I assume it's not just the two of you who decide. Is there a team meeting, an editorial meeting to decide what stories are going to go where, or what, you know, let's say there are four or five mm-hmm. big news items on any given day. How do you decide what is going to be headlined? And Emily, if you want to take that as editor in chief.
Sure. So we have weekly meetings on Sundays,
okay.
where all of our editorial staff, so the section editors and our advisor, Glenn Cranking.
Right, my colleague in history, yeah.
Yes, and our head copy editor all come together, and we put down our ideas for each section and the photo needs, and you know, help each other out when we're struggling with ideas. Talk about plans for future articles if we know we have big events coming up. And then that night, our section editors will reach out to their writers and photographers and assign the week's assignments.
Okay. So as a professional newspaper would work, those that remain anyway. and that reminded me, as I said in my intro, the good news is, wow, student journalism is really flourishing, which leads me to my next question. Cadence, you can take this if you want. So tell us a little bit about how the weekly is funded. I mean, there's always this concern about, you know, is a college or a campus or a high school newspaper, you know, how independent is it? But how is it funded? To what extent are you really free to you know, print what you'd like?
I believe there's something in our in the like colleges clause that states that we are a totally free student run newspaper. We can say what we want, and rather than like an org that gets its funding from the student senate, we right. are considered an on-campus job, so we get our funding from the school itself.
Okay. So, I mean, I suppose there could be some tension there. And I don't know enough about the history of the weekly, and you can talk about this maybe in your own experience, whether the funding coming from the school sometimes interferes with the, with the freedom you have, at least on paper. Anyway, and Professor Cranking was, I think he was maybe editor-in-chief. Mm-hmm. I can't remember yep. at one point.
He was.
Am I right? Yeah.
Okay. Just for one yeah. semester.
Okay. And Warren Beck of Beck Hall, who is a trustee, now passed away, sadly. Warren was, I got to interview him. It was so much fun. Not for the podcast, before I started podcasting, but I remember him saying worked for the weekly. And just, you know, obviously, you know, just what you just said, each of you about your roles. I mean, just great experience, whether you're going into journalism or not, right? All the managing of time you have to do and dealing with other human beings, right? Managing human beings as well, meeting deadlines, et cetera. All very cool. So it's a major job, right? Getting that thing out for listeners who don't know, it comes out Friday. It's on Thursday night or Friday morning. I always see it on Fridays. I guess is it printed like Thursday evening, Emily? Or
it's usually, I think, around 10:30 to 11 on Wednesday night it gets printed.
Oh, Wednesday
printed.
Night. Okay.
And then it's ready sometime on Thursday to be picked up and distributed around campus. So between Thursday night and Friday morning.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, your perspectives on the past year and more, if you like. From your positions, you're both students, but not just any students, you're student journalists and not just any student journalists either, right, given your positions. But what's your sense, you know, Emily, if you want to start first, what are, obviously the pandemic, right, and of course, mm-hmm. talk to us about that, but what are, as you think back on the past year in particular, what have been some of the big issues on campus?
Yeah, beginning with the pandemic, I mean, I was home doing everything remotely for, I think, my fall semester of my junior year. So writing for News and Variety, every story was pandemic related. which, you know, obviously it was a very big deal, and it still is, and it affected every aspect of life at Gustavus.
That's well said.
But by, you know, the time we started the school year, everyone was like, please, no more COVID articles. If I have to write one more thing about how COVID has impacted, you know, whatever group or org performing or coming back, we're going to lose it. So it was definitely nice to be able to, you know, be able to focus on some other really big, very important things happening this year.
Like what, for example? Go ahead.
I think the largest trend I've noticed is just a heightened awareness of social responsibility and the importance of activism. I think, you know, with everything that's happened over the past 2 years, just the articles we've seen, the presentations and speeches and lectures that Gustavus has offered for students, you know, the actions of student orgs on campus, people are very involved, very passionate about speaking up for what they believe in. And it's been fascinating to be able to cover that.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, I mean, I'm just, you know, if you go back, gosh, well, George Floyd was what, May, that was 2020, right? That was 2 years ago.
Yes.
And just everything that's happened around, yeah, social justice issues. And some of this, of course, inevitably, I mean, inextricably bound up with what was happening politically in this country at the in terms of the Trump's presidency and Trumpism, to use that term, whether one is a Trump supporter or not, that's just an undeniable fact. Cadence, what's your sense? Thank you, Emily. We can come back to some of that maybe. Go ahead, Cadence.
Yeah, I guess I'll start at the beginning. When COVID first started, it was still my freshman year of college.
Yeah, I know. That's funny.
It was, I guess I've only had really, I guess, one normal, air quotes, normal semester. And yeah, when things went online, I was the photography editor and we couldn't really get pictures because no one was on campus.
Right.
And then when we came back, they're like, let's report on how no one's here. So we'd have pictures of an empty swimming pool, an empty football field, empty cafeteria. And just like Emily said, we were so sick of it that when people started coming back, we were like, we need people in these pictures. But I think it really reflected how empty campus felt. Nothing felt the same without, you know, the people that make it, as cheesy as that sounds.
No. It's also true. I was there a couple of times, you know, once we could go back, and it was weird. Yeah. Right. Very strange. Right. Without students and faculty and everybody else, what is it? Right. It's just a bunch of buildings. Empty. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, you're good. That's very accurate. And especially now with the nice weather and our first more normal semester, I get a bit overwhelmed with how many people I see, but it's nice.
Yeah.
And then with other things that have happened, there's, you know, the war with Russia and Ukraine. And I remember we were even told by a professor, you know, why are you reporting on this? This isn't student journalism. And Emily, I think, handled it really well. We were like, this affects all of us. You know, a part of this. And yeah, it was very strange. I remember when Trump came to Mankato, we had a student take pictures of that. And it was wild just to have someone, you know, I don't know, to have it be all right here. Cause I think a lot of people imagine, you know, oh, you're students, you're in college, you're in this little bubble, but we're really not. And to be able to reflect that in the newspaper of how interconnected all of these problems are has been unfortunate, but also a really great opportunity.
Yeah. And thank you so much for saying that. First of all, my own view is if you had not been reporting, if you aren't reporting on what's going on with the Russia, Ukraine, with Russia's invasion, let's call it what it is in my view, that would be malfeasance. And secondly, the idea that I detest that idea. I detested it when I was a student, and I probably detest it even more as a professor, that we're in some ivory tower or bubble. Mm-hmm. Really? People still get sick. People still, right? I mean, you know, I mean, we're in the real world, and the real world impacts us. And what I alluded to in the introduction I've been doing with two other students, history majors, it's been fun. Looking at Gustavus 50 years ago, 1972. And what one of them found, which I will never forget, it is so cool. Maybe I'll email it to both of you. The yearbook for that year, 72, 50 years ago, the yearbook is covered front and back. I thought it was such a cool design, which is kind of almost kind of headlined, you know, of what was going on both on campus and off campus. Because the world, I'm preaching to the choir here, I realize. Yeah, the world impinges on Gustavus. And wow, so I guess I'm kind of shocked that a professor or anyone would think it's not within your purview to report on.
I will say it's not a popular view. There are many professors that I've talked to who absolutely love that we're so connected with things. So it wasn't something that happens too often.
Good to know. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. That was loud.
What was that? Go ahead.
I wasn't sorry. We could edit that out. I wasn't sure if you heard my laptop made a very loud noise.
Oh, no, we don't need to edit it out. That's okay. I thought it was, is it Kiko? Is that what she said? The kitty cat?
Yeah, she's so happy asleep in a sunspot on my bed.
I was just saying, I haven't heard a peep out of her. So what, Cadence, do you have thoughts about beyond the Ukraine? What are some of the other big issues the past year or even early, if you like, that are... And they don't have to be related to off-campus events. I mean, things internal to the campus. I'm thinking both of you can comment if you like the unnaming maybe is what better way to put it, of the Arboretum. Mm-hmm. Is that one? I don't know how much, what's your sense? I guess what I'm asking is what's your sense of, from your perspective as editors of the student, what's your sense of what's interesting and bugging students and or bugging students on campus. Cadence, you want to chime in?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I guess the first thing I thought of was work that I've done in classes I've taken involving like race. There was that one incident with some, I believe it was just racist remarks made in the locker room or graffiti on the locker. And I remember I was still the photography editor for that. And you know, making the decisions of we're not going to publish a picture of that so it doesn't re-traumatize people. Mm-hmm. But still, of course, mentioning it. And I was taking, I believe last year, Race and Racism with Jillian Locke.
Oh, dear, great colleague and friend. Yeah, prof. Yeah.
She's amazing. And she helped me kind of collectively put together with all the books we've read an article that I did write for Opinion about, you know, why is our campus that consists of mostly white people so afraid to talk about race and kind of how we can gear more of our learning towards hearing from actual experiences from people of color. And with the Arboretum, I think it's just a great reflection that shows how we are more aware as a campus and as a generation, and we're not going to just sit back and let unjust things happen anymore. We're going to use our voices to speak up and make a change.
Yeah. And that, by the way, that op-ed that you wrote, I guess was an op-ed, right? Opinion piece. You just reminded me, there's a long history of that. I've been looking at the weekly back into the 1960s, even earlier than the late 60s, partly because of my teaching the first term seminar in the 60s. Anyway, long history of student journalists and also readers grappling with that fact, which is still the case, right? We're a mostly white camp. This is not unique to Gustavus, by the way, right? We're by any means, we're a mostly white campus in a mostly white, you know, town in a mostly white state, mostly white region. But yeah, that's all really interesting. And my sense too, I do sense there's more, it's a different kind of activism maybe than in the past. I'm thinking around, South Africa and apartheid and disinvestment, but definitely that kind of activism that you're both describing. Emily, do you want to say any other things about this? Jump in.
I completely agree with everything Cadence has said. I think even going back to last year and just the student outrage with the renaming process of the Arboretum and the very fraught discussions about the college's Indigenous relations.
Right.
I think the role of student activism and calling awareness to issues just was so fast. And in my mind, you know, very accurately summed up what it was that was wrong and what it was that we wanted to address. I still don't know if the quickness of the student response has been matched by the response of the college overall. It still seems like there's a lot of work being done, which while wonderful, seems like it has been taking a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I do believe it could have been addressed in a satisfactory way much sooner.
Yeah, colleges, right, and universities, we're notorious for usually moving slowly, not always. So it depends on the context. But I agree with you. There's some things that the trustees did, including around the renaming of the ARB for listeners who don't know, the Linnaeus Arboretum, which in my experience 35 years at Gustavus was always referred to as the ARB. I never heard anyone say, except in maybe something written, Linnaeus, I'll meet you in the Linnaeus. I was just, I'll meet you in the ARB, which I guess
like is the Evan Lone Young Dining Center.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Precisely. Yeah. I will see you in the Anderson Theater. Yeah. Anyway, because of, you know, the links between, you know, which are contested by some. I think Professor Cranking is one of them who, you know, has a different view and others too. But in any case, you know, the connections, the asserted connections between Linnaeus and so-called scientific racism. The trustees, I thought they moved pretty quickly. And there was, some long kind of, in some ways, it felt drawn out, I guess, but at least a process that I think most people could buy into. But I take your point. I was just talking again with someone, it was the almost alum, I guess I call him, with whom I was having breakfast, just about how slowly sometimes the college can move around some issues, which drives me crazy. But yeah, that sense of, and this is nationwide again, right? I mean, it's precipitated by the murder of George Floyd and then other similar horrible events, but not just that. It's, I think, been building for a while. Mm-hmm. We'll see where it goes. I always wonder where this stuff ends up, and that's the role, by the way, I think isn't that really an important role you play as editors, and that the Weekly plays is to both not only report on this stuff, but also in a way, try to lead in some ways. I know I don't know what you both think about this idea that journalists must be quote unquote objective. You know, do you have any thoughts about that? I mean, this is, go ahead, take that anywhere you want.
Yeah. I'll start off by saying, as much as I love the role of journalism, I do believe it's become very biased and corrupt in many ways, in other papers. And what I like about our Weekly is that, it's as much as our writing has to be objective, we are people and we do experience it. And right. It's hard to be an objective person. And I think in a lot of ways, wrong to be objective in the face of so many wrongdoings.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think this idea, when objectivity means neutral in the face of, let's call a lie a lie, or let's call racism racism, yeah. And I've been listening to some professional journalists wrestle with this as well. Emily, you want to jump in?
I agree. I think you put it perfectly. There's a difference between objectivity and neutrality. And, calling something out for what it is truthful. Right. And while it might not be an objective standpoint, it is, I think
realistic.
Exactly. And it's the duty of journalists everywhere.
Yeah, it's honesty, right? Yeah, and journalism is advocacy. Anyway, and I think the Weekly's been doing a good job around these very issues we're kicking around here. So let's fast forward a little bit. So Cadence, we know you're going to be back at the Weekly, which is exciting, as editor in chief. Congratulations again on that. What are your, to the extent that you have them, and I'm one of these professors who believes it's perfectly fine if you have no plans, no ideas what you want to do post Gustavus, but are you already thinking about that, Cadence, what you might want to do? Once you graduate, go ahead.
I'm very much a planner, so I've kind of had everything laid out since I was a kid, I guess you could say. Well, not necessarily. I've changed my mind a bajillion times, but I like at least having one idea in mind.
Yeah. All right.
I'm looking at grad schools, actually. I love that you mentioned Boston University. That's one of the places I'm looking into applying for grad school. I'd love to get an MFA in creative writing and eventually a PhD in English. I'd love to either continue in the editing and publishing industry and or become an English professor.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, good for you. The I will speak highly of Boston University. That's where I went. I was I could have gone to a bunch of schools. I was lucky. I loved Boston, having been there in high school and its history, and really, really had a terrific history education. My wife, Kate, also, who was in the American Studies program, not history. Anyway, good for you. I hope you get in and Jim, have you been to Boston before?
Yes, I have family out there, my uncle and my grandma on my mom's side. I just visited Boston University this past summer, I want to say, and it was amazing. My uncle went there and he gave me a little tour,
Oh, do you know what his major was or what he did?
I want to say biochemistry, something with biology.
Yeah, it's an excellent, excellent university, really top. I might still be the largest private university in the country. And it's right there, right? It's right by Fenway Park, right there. When I say right there, right there in the city, which I just love. I'm an urbanist at heart. That's neat. And then what about, so Keynes, are you, you're graduating in December. That's why it's just a semester gig for editor-in-chief. Yes. Is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's right. I said that. I think I alluded to that in the intro. And Emily, what about you? What are you planning to do? Your graduation is what, a week away or so?
Fast approaching.
Congratulations. Yeah. What are your plans? Thank you.
I will be taking a gap year before hopefully getting into a forensic anthropology graduate program.
Oh, wow.
I'm still looking around, seeing where I'd like to apply. But I think anywhere on the coasts would be nice.
Yeah, I'm a coastal guy too. I love well, love Chicago and Minneapolis, St. Paul, but the coasts are neat. That's really cool. Well, both of you, again, I mean, Emily, you might be writing, you know, crime novels or crime, who knows?
I'd love to.
What are you going to do during the gap year? Do you know? Are you going to travel or?
Yeah, so I have a current internship with a company called Grasshopper, which is focused on women and non-binary individuals in the workplace and forming mentorships and connections.
Wow, that's neat.
And I currently write newsletters and blog posts, so I am going to continue to do that.
That's great.
Thank you. While also looking for another writing position.
Awesome. What are the newsletters about?
Yes. There's several per month. Okay. And we focus on, you know, I think our last one was focused on Mother's Day, National Mental Health Awareness. So we had a letter from our CEO and founder, Heather Miller.
Okay, these are through Grasshopper, in other words.
Yes.
I got it. Yes. Okay, yeah.
And then, you know, our advice column and, you know, links to our TikToks and Instagram lives that we've been putting on, so...
That's great. And I love that both of you, I love writing. I mean, I do love writing. It's sometimes, especially in the past when I was your age, especially and into graduate school, writing could be really hard for me. And it is hard, even if people say it's work, right? But I do love writing. I've always loved language. There's nothing like a good sentence, you know, when I read it. I just heard Professor, speaking of an English prof, Professor Phil Bryant's honors talk. And there were just so many great lines.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, great talk. And was happy to podcast with him back when, too. Anyway, that's great. It sounds like you have good plans. So, and hope all of them, you know, more or less come to fruition. There are all kinds of twists and turns in life, but you're well prepared with the Gustavus education. Yeah. And you're ability to write, right? The writing ability, people just don't understand. Some people don't understand how valuable that is. You know, even in the corporate sector, anywhere, how important that is. So I'll tell you something. One of the things, if I'm looking for, this is true, if I'm looking for a doctor or a financial planner, for example, I care about how they write. It's not the only, I also care about where they're educated. You know, I mean, are they, you know, is it a, you know, online degree from someplace I've never heard of, but you know, if they write well, that says so much to me. Same with them, by the way, if we're hiring a colleague, a potential colleague, or, you know, if I'm looking at, you know, let's say an incoming president or something like that of the college, right? How well do these people write and communicate? It's so important. So anyway, that's a little aside / sermon, maybe. What, You're both. I mean, Emily, you obviously are graduating, as we've said, and Cadence, you will be in one more semester. I wonder what your pitches are for Gustavus. What would you say to prospective students? And I realize you've both touched on this already, but if you kind of each make your so-called elevator pitch. Cadence, you want to start? We'll give Emily the last word since she's graduated. Go ahead, Cadence.
That sounds fair. Yeah. I'd say something I really wish I'd heard is, as someone who gains very high expectations for things, to try not to come in with any expectations, because I think you put it really well that life has so many twists and turns, and like neither of us expected, you know, to be sent home due to the pandemic that either of us knew would happen. But I think, yeah, it's really important to just come in not expecting anything. Just try to keep an open mind in as much as you can. And I think it's really the people that make the campus. One thing I had a professor say my freshman year was, feel free to critique our institution because you want better for it.
Yes.
And so I think it's really important to recognize that everything has faults. And so going in with no expectations, feeling free to speak up when wrong things happen, and really try to, I know everyone says this, but participate in as much as you can. Don't stretch yourself as thin as I did. Right. But I think it's gave me so many great opportunities to meet amazing people.
Yeah, that's all well said. I think really well said. And I agree. I would loudly say, I'll play some of this for my first term seminar students, actually, just occurred to me. Or have you come in, Cadence, even, along with a malt?
I'd love to. I was a malt for two semesters.
Oh, you were a malt too. Okay. Wow. Both of you. Malts. Emily, what about you?
Let's see. I think, you know, you hear it a lot, but I think your college experience really is what you make it. My first year, honestly, I was so homesick and convinced I was going to transfer schools because, you know, I missed Colorado. I missed the weather. That was the year we had our polar vortex, and I was about ready to leave, I think like a month into the semester. But, you know, really giving yourself the time to adjust and appreciating all the new experiences you gain just as a byproduct of being in a new location among new people. And, you know, just giving yourself the time to adjust and appreciating that things might have a rocky start, but you put yourself out there, you try new things, and soon enough, everything works out.
Yeah, exactly. Without the rockiness, I don't know. I don't know that there can be success in learning without that. You know, this idea that somehow that people have to be perfectly comfortable to learn. In some ways, no, that's the opposite, I would argue. But in any case, I like what you both said about you're echoing one another around this idea of keeping an open mind and being open to new experiences. And I'm going to think about what you said, Cadence, too, about no expectations. It's kind of interesting. I'm going to ponder that. Maybe work that into my FTS, my first term seminar. So we're going to conclude, but I cannot conclude without first asking you, Cadence, about snails as pets.
Yes.
Tell us briefly about that.
Oh, they are so amazing. I know some people get grossed out because they're cold and slimy, but I loved the sensation of just holding them, having them crawl on your hands, watching them eat. It's very strange. The really transparent ones, you can see the food kind of go through like their bodies. And I was just very intrigued by that.
Wow. And as I said before we started recording, I love escargot. Ooh. Don't worry, I'm not going to use it. What? You don't have them there with your cat, or do you?
No, she wouldn't be able to get to them. They weren't free roaming. They were in a cage, but I gave them to a friend who can take care of them far better than me.
Did they have names?
They did. I had three small ones. I can't remember the kind that they were, but there was Brock, which was short for broccoli. Okay. That was his favorite snack. There was Davey, a friend of mine named him, and then Ellie from the movie Up. And then my big snail, who I loved to hold, was Apollo.
Oh, wow. That's great. Cool. My wife, Kate, she had, I guess they were those little frogs as a kid. That's what she collected. The and Emily, what about you? Do you have any pets or things you like to do for fun you'd like to share with us?
Oh, my dog Sage. He is a 2-year-old golden doodle. We got him just before the pandemic. So I got to, you know, stay home and spend extra time with him, and I love him so much.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, we had a black lab we had to put down a few years ago after 16 years. We dog sit a friends who have a golden doodle. Mm-hmm. Well, you both are really interesting. It's been fun to speak with you. Pleasure. You've done really good and important work. And Cadence, you're going to continue on in Emily's footsteps, so to speak, shoes.
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure. I have no doubt about that. Congratulations to you both on, first of all, on completing another academic year amid COVID. Things seem a bit better. We'll hold our breath, so to speak. And Emily, a huge congratulations to you on your about to be alumni status. So good luck with the finals, all the essays. Thank you for making the time, and take good care. And let's stay in touch, okay? Keep me posted as you go on to become, famous anthropologists, whatever, writers, et cetera, English professors, all right? Take good care, and thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's really been fun. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Learning for Life at Gustavus is produced by J.J. Aiken and Matthew Dobosensky of the Gustavus Office of Marketing, Gustavus graduate Will Clark, class of 20, who also provides technical expertise to the podcast, and me. The views expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of Gustavus Adolphus College.